effectiveness of prayer according to God's Word. Tune in for A New Beginning with Pastor Greg Laurie.
Weekdays at 8:30 a.m. on KLYT.
You're listening to The Light, KLYT Albuquerque Santa Fe. Rebroadcast on KNKT Cannon Air Force Base, K201CC Las Cruces, K228DQ Portales, and worldwide at KLYT.fm. From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE, ABQ Connect.
We are, we're headed towards a week. Listen, has anyone looked at the 10-day? Oh, man. Triple digits, like what the next week? I actually saw the forecast I just saw, like in the last 10 minutes, says a week from tomorrow will be about 10 degrees cooler. So anytime we're saying whoo to the 90s, you know it's hot. Hey, that being said, plenty of water, and just be aware. And actually, not only for yourself, be aware of others that you know that may need assistance. Maybe you know someone whose swamp cooler doesn't work so great, or they don't have something. You know, check on those that you're aware of. Pay a little closer attention. Hey, Monday we had Mark Skalberg on ABQ Connect with Jim Williams, talking about starting over on the inside. And in Hebrews chapter 3, verse 13, we read, "Remember those who are in prison, as though in prison with them, and those who are mistreated, since you also are in the body." That from the English Standard Version. All this month, we're featuring that ministry, Starting Over on the Inside, that does workshops in prisons and actually has been adopted as the official Colorado Department of Corrections program for all of their facilities. It's available on-site or via video. And really, the purpose is to equip prisoners with the needed character qualities, life skills for their successful return to society. And the goals of the ministry are to transform hearts with the love of Jesus Christ, lower the recidivism rate in Colorado, which is very near New Mexico, somewhere in the 50 percentile. Nationwide is at 44%. They also provide life skills education like housing, employment, transportation, and more. As a matter of fact, here's a quick testimony from one of the participants in the workshop. Here's Jimmy.
Hi, this is Jimmy. I met Mark when I was incarcerated at the Arrowhead facility in Canyon City, Colorado, rather. And I had just become a Christian a couple years earlier. But what I had needed at the time was taking the new identity that I had had, and I needed some information and some wisdom on how to apply that to my life. Starting Over on the Inside was the perfect program for this, especially for a new Christian. I think the first thing was my new identity. I knew that I had given my life to Christ. I had believed that Christ was real, that the Bible was real. It had all come alive to me and had been coming alive to me. But what Starting Over on the Inside helped point it out was the emphasis that I am a new creature. I am a new creation, and what that looked like. And it didn't mean forgetting the past or that I was separated from my past completely. But it meant that God had a purpose for my past and that he was going to use my past in order to bring glory to his name in the future. And that was very important for me to understand and to realize, because before then, all I had from my past was kind of like this possession of shame and guilt. And I didn't understand that God, the Father, could use that for his good and his glory. And it gave me great hope for the future. Since my release, Mark has been very supportive in helping me to continue to grow and understand the importance of forgiveness, my new responsibility I take in my new identity and Christianity and being a follower of Jesus Christ, and also the importance of forgiveness. Of course, one of the greatest tasks I think that we all face, especially after going through a process like incarceration, is forgiving ourselves. And Mark has helped point out to me that then I'm not in charge. I'm not God, and God is in charge. If God has made the decision to forgive me through his son, Jesus Christ, then I am now able to believe that I am forgiven, and I can start that process of self-forgiveness because the creator of all things, the king of the universe, has told me in his word, you are forgiven. So now I have the ability to forgive myself. And that's one of the more difficult tasks, I think, that a lot of new Christians, especially after being incarcerated, have had to face. And I think once that forgiveness process starts for self, then it can kind of expand out towards others who may have had confrontations with and things of that sort. So Mark Skalberg has done a fantastic job of putting together a perfect formula and starting over on the inside for new Christians and maybe, you know, Christians who have backslidden and re-given their lives over to Christ. He's given a perfect layout of principles and Christian ideologies that help us apply real Christianity to our lives in order to start over from the inside. It's been a great process. I've developed a great friendship with Mark, and I'm very grateful for the program.
All right. That is Jimmy, one of the testimonies from starting over on the inside. Yesterday we heard from Derek, and when he talks about Mark Skalberg, that's the founder and director of Starting Over on the Inside. And as you listen to these guys throughout the month, you know, if you're like me, you listen and you think, you know, this is how it sounds like someone, I mean, that could be in my sphere of influence. Well, listen, 25% of the U.S. population knows someone who's been arrested and or incarcerated. If you want to find out more, go to klyt.fm. That's the website for 88.3 FM. It's klyt.fm. You'll find information, even podcast with the Colorado Director of Prisons, testimonials there as well, and opportunities to donate, whether you want to do a one-time gift or a recurring gift to help us meet our goal this month of $25,000 raised for Starting Over on the Inside. All right. Thanks for letting us take a little time to feature our featured ministry for July. We welcome Paul Gessing into studio from the Rio Grande Foundation. I say thank you to you, Paul, because we put aside today's time primarily for catching up with you and some of the things you're doing at the Rio Grande Foundation and at heirsofenchantment.com. Do I say welcome home? When did you take a trip to Texas?
Over the 4th of July, over Independence Day, we took a family vacation that involved going from the northern part of Texas to the southern part of Texas. We flew into Dallas, but actually went all the way up to the Choctaw Casino in southern Oklahoma. My daughter's a fan of a particular country music artist that played a show up there. And then we went from Dallas to Waco to San Antonio to Austin and all the way down to Port Aransas and the beaches near Corpus Christi.
Did you point out Wolford Hall in San Antonio to the kids and say, that's where Steve was born?
No, I did not. You should have told me. I would have put flowers or something there.
Yeah, I lived there for 2 weeks.
Okay.
So, you know, it wasn't like, I don't think anyone there remembers me. I'm glad you got to go. So there you probably had the temperature and the humidity.
You know, it was warm. Nothing crazy, especially considering what we're coming back to here in Albuquerque. But San Antonio is definitely a hot town. It's considerably further south than even Dallas. It's not near the beaches or the water or anything, so you don't get any cool breezes. And
now, had you been to the Alamo before?
No, never been.
Was it much smaller than you anticipated?
The building was small, but I recommend that if folks get down there, they take the guided tour.
I agree.
And it really explains things in a way that just walking around into the facility. And then, you know, a little bit of trivia here. You're familiar, of course, with the singer Phil Collins, right? Phil Collins was apparently a very, very enthusiastic collector of Alamo-related memorabilia and donated, or at least is sharing currently, his entire collection, which is
very good.
Several room-size places you can go around that property and look at various weapons and various items that were there at the Alamo back in 1836. So really neat stuff. And Phil Collins, watching those Disney movies about the Alamo and whatnot, turned him on to it.
Yeah, well, so I wonder how many Bowie knives he had.
I think a few, yeah.
All right, well, welcome home, Paul, and I'm glad you, that sounds like a great family trip, creating memories for the kids, but you saw much more than just sightseeing things on your trip to Texas.
Well, you know, I always go places and see things that get my policy side of my brain focused on those kinds of issues. And of course, doing public policy work in New Mexico, we are always looking at states surrounding us that do things generally better, more free market, more limited government. And Texas, just going there, and you know, I've been numerous times on that I-40 stretch in the northern part of the state, Amarillo.
Yeah.
And that's a good part of Texas to see what's going on. But driving from north of Dallas at the Oklahoma state line all the way to the coast, that is a real taste of Texas. And there was construction the whole way. Now, people don't like construction, but construction means your economy's growing. You've got people moving into the area. You got businesses. There was a lot going on in terms of just the roads. And then you drive by the Tesla facility that Elon Musk has going, the second largest enclosed space building in the world. The first is Everett, Washington Boeing facility, where they assemble airplanes. That Tesla facility is very impressive. And I'm not going to get into the subsidy issue of Tesla, but the fact is he built it there because Texas doesn't have high taxes. It has no income tax, got a lot of workers, enthusiastic attitude work.
He didn't need to put it on a reservation there.
No, well, those are dealerships,
yeah,
and that's a whole different
so.
Ball of wax, but they're manufacturing the Teslas outside of Austin.
That place is huge.
And, there's just a lot of, go get 'em mentality there in Texas. And I would only add that if you haven't been to Texas and checked out a Buc-ee's or southeastern part of the country, Buc-ee's will restore your faith in capitalism.
Yeah,
an amazing facility.
Texas is a whole nother country.
It is in many ways. But Texas isn't the only place you can find a Buc-ee's. Buc-ee's is all over the South, and they don't even have them in all of Texas. So I don't think you can go to Lubbock and get one, and you can't go to Amarillo and get one, at least not yet. But they are amazing. They pay very high wages to their workers, and they are very busy with a diverse crowd of people all in there. Delicious brisket and neat stuff.
Needless to say, you were encouraged by what you saw in Texas, just to see it with your own eyes, to know capitalism, can work and it's possible.
It can work. We just have to give it a chance here in New Mexico. And, I sometimes think I have a mind meld with John Trevor from the Albuquerque Journal. And he had a cartoon in the Sunday paper, which he showed the difference between Texas and New Mexico. And he had, a one-panel cartoon with Texas and New Mexico, dotted line. There's no dotted line when you cross the border, but it's good for a cartoon. And on the New Mexico side, he had weed world, marijuana legalization, and abortion. On the Texas side, this is further down the road. He had no electric vehicle mandates. That's, of course, just one of many economic and other policies that is superior in Texas that makes that state go. But they don't have the economic regulation burden that we have in New Mexico. And yeah, it really highlights the differing economic development philosophies between New Mexico and Texas. We're, you know, emphasizing sin, if you will. I mean, you can argue about marijuana.
Right. I mean, they call it a sin tax for a reason.
And abortion, certainly, whereas Texas is emphasizing economic freedom. And we know which one works better.
Yeah. Well, a great way to start the show today. I mean, we had a real positive start with the opportunity to hear about good things happening with people that are incarcerated, preparing to return to society and being introduced to Christ before they do that, and ways to be successful when they get out of prison. We heard about your trip to Texas and what an encouragement that was. Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back to reality and take a look at some of the things happening right here in our state as we continue our conversation with Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation. We'll be back with more right after this on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
All right, we are in the midst of a conversation with Paul Gessing. He's the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, riograndefoundation.org on the web. And actually, each of the stories we're going to talk about, including from our first segment, a firsthand report from Texas Booming, is where you can find those blogs from Paul, primarily from Paul, at errorsofenchantment.com. And I said before we went to break, Paul, you know, we all talked about how nice your time was in Texas. And you too, Paul, we both love New Mexico. It's just the frustration of the policy issues that we keep coming up against. And one of them talking about not necessarily policy, but our governor making claims that the unemployment rate is one place where really?
Yeah, well, we were talking about this because there was an ad running about a job right here for the station. And New Mexico has a very bad workforce participation rate. We've talked about that fairly extensively. Those data are compiled by a federal entity called the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Well, you know, I always am out on the internet looking at economic data and the way it's presented. Well, the Pew Center on the States, which is, you know, a very credible center-oriented nonprofit, looked at prime working age employment and the rates of people working in the economy before and after the COVID-19 pandemic. New Mexico, unfortunately, is one of two states, West Virginia being the other, that has a lower rate of those working age people working than we did before the pandemic. As of quarter one of 2023, we have 72% working, 76.1% of them worked quarter one 2020. Other states around us are seeing, you know, improvements in the employment rate, and they're starting from a higher rate than we are. Oklahoma is the lowest. They are now at 78%. They were at 76.2. Texas, Utah, Arizona, all well above 80%. Colorado, interestingly enough, currently has the highest prime working age employment rate in any state near us, 86.3%. So again, 14.3% more percentage of Coloradans working than we have in New Mexico. And that's, everybody's trying to find people, preferably good people, but warm bodies sometimes will help for a lot of jobs. And those are people that pay taxes. They reduce the overall tax burden twofold because they're not getting government benefits anymore, by and large, or they're getting less government benefits, and they are paying money into the economy. And, you know, as important as the education conversation is in this state and the struggles that we have with education, it is problem 1B that we're not getting people who could be working, who should be working in New Mexico to work. And right now we have jobs for everybody up and down the kind of the wage scale.
Oh yeah. You just drive down any major boulevard in Albuquerque, especially, I mean, I know it's probably the same on the west side too. Primarily I'm in the Northeast Heights driving the grid you know, sign after sign, help wanted, hiring now. So Paul, any answers to why our neighboring states, you know, what can we learn? What can we implement that would, you know, help to make that change where we would be, not lacking in people getting to work?
Wow. Well, there's a lot. You know, this isn't a silver bullet kind of situation. And a lot of people blame New Mexico's culture, and I don't disagree with those people, but the culture ultimately drives who we elect into office and the policies that we live under, thanks to the governor and the legislature. You know, we have the gross receipts tax, we have higher taxes, more government spending, more generous welfare benefits, and those chase good jobs and economic growth out of the state. The education system doesn't get the job done. I mean, those are just a few of the critical things that could be changed to address this situation. And maybe it won't necessarily be solved next year or the year before. But, you know, there's a great line about what's the best time to plant a tree. Well, the very best time is, you know, 40 years ago when you want the shade right now, especially on these hot days.
Right.
But the next best time besides 40 years ago is today, because maybe it won't happen in your lifetime, but you'll eventually improve things for future generations. And that's kind of where we are in terms of a lot of these economic policy issues. And yeah, one or two of those that I mentioned would help, but doing all of them would really make New Mexico in an envious position in the southwest part of our country, not the worst position in the southwestern part of our country.
Yeah, and like you said, it's not a silver bullet, and neither, I'm sure, is this, Paul. But, you know, we both know the definition of insanity, and we've been trying the same thing in New Mexico for 90 years in some ways, and without a change, we can't expect you know, a lot of these issues to go away. Just, you know, if we're going to keep voting the way we vote and have the people represent us who are representing us and not getting the job done, then, you know, be pleased with the status quo, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's unfortunately the problem that, you know, kind of fundamentally haunts New Mexico, is this kind of acceptance of the status quo and acceptance of performing poorly. And, you know, whether it's kids count and children suffering, or our children leaving and the state not growing and getting older, we seem to be stuck in that mentality. And it requires a fundamental shift in our thinking.
Hey, but we can brag now that New Mexico finally has a billionaire. Homegrown.
We can, yes. And this is one of those things, again, just bumping around on the internet. And New Mexico traditionally, because we're a small state, but also because we're a poor state with a relatively small private sector, we traditionally haven't had a very wealthy person compared to the wealthy in other states. And some people think this is a great thing. Some people think this isn't a great thing. I personally just think it's an indicator of our economic situation alongside numerous other indicators. Some of the wealthiest people in other states, some people recall Sheldon Adelson. He was a casino guy in Nevada. $36.2 billion is what his wife and family have. Michael Bloomberg in New York, he's a pretty household name. $94.5 billion. Phil Knight, the founder of Nike, Oregon, $41.8 billion. So those are some really big names in some big industries. Here in New Mexico, Ron Corio is the guy's name. He started Array Solar. It's based in Albuquerque, and it's valued at his wealth is valued at $1.7 billion. So he's small potatoes compared to some of the richest people in the bigger states in this country, but he made his money in solar, not in oil and gas, which, of course, oil and gas is the money-making industry of the state of New Mexico. But quite frankly, a lot of the people who are at the top levels in the top companies in oil and gas don't stay in New Mexico because the business climate's not very friendly. Why does Ron Corio stick around? Well, even though he's paying income taxes and he's paying taxes that he might not be enthusiastic about, he's also getting a lot of subsidies, and the whole state apparatus here in New Mexico is really focused on subsidizing and mandating things like solar, like his company produces. So I'm sure that factors into the equation. But Ron Corio, New Mexico's wealthiest man, valued at $1.7 billion. This is from a Forbes report, the richest in each state 2023. So very new data.
You know, looking at this and what you said about, you know, getting companies to come here and stay here, obviously turns my thought towards economic development. And you know, when I think about fixing the state, and I forget his name. I networked with him years ago. The gentleman who was maybe 5 years ago doing, maybe he's still doing it, the economic development in Valencia County. And, you know, you saw so many businesses building along the I-25 corridor there. And, you know, you wonder, I mean, was it a I don't know about the numbers, but I can't imagine that with all those companies moving in that, you know, maybe some of the numbers there were better than other parts of the state. And, you know, can we even learn across the state from some of the counties that are able to do things well?
Well, certainly Valencia County and Rio Rancho are two areas of New Mexico that have typically punched above their weight, so to speak, when it comes to economic growth. Southeast New Mexico, very conservative area, blessed with oil and gas, so that's a little bit unfair. And certainly you can learn lessons from those parts of New Mexico that are growing quicker and more attractive to job creators. But I think the state policies are really where it's at, and those state policies drive the economic success or failure of states in ways that local policy can't quite achieve.
Well, you have to wonder, I do, you have to wonder if some of the people having success in some of those areas that you talked about, do they have aspirations for higher office that maybe would get them to Santa Fe? Just a thought.
Yeah.
But hey, we're up against a break. We're going through the full hour, most of the hour today, with Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. The website is riograndefoundation.org. And actually, Paul, we typically do this, but for those, and if they've listened for today's show, they can obviously pretty much figure out what it is the Rio Grande Foundation does, but you articulate it so much better than I do.
Oh, well, thank you.
What would you tell the listener about the Rio Grande Foundation that are not familiar with it?
Well, Rio Grande Foundation's a state public policy think tank. We are working to make New Mexico a better state by improving our economy and education system. You can find out more about the organization at riograndefoundation.org, heirsofenchantment.com. And I always tell people, someday I want to change the name of that blog, heirsofenchantment.com, because I want this to be a successful state. We don't have to be number one. I don't go expecting 50 to 1. I want to go from at least 50 to 25. I want to keep our kids and grandkids in the state of New Mexico. I want to be competitive with those states that surround us in our region, where we're not kind of the center of the donuts, where nothing is really happening. And we've got the oil and gas and federal government, and that's what props us up despite our bad policies. But we can do so much better in the state.
All right. We'll be back with more with Paul Gessing, the Rio Grande Foundation, right after the break on ABQ Connect.
on KLYT. This is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE.
Hey, we hope you tune in daily for ABQ Connect, 1 o'clock, Monday through Friday. And I've told plenty of people as we talk about the show and in the time that I've been hosting it here this year, how much I've learned. I mean, to have the guests in that we have with the information that we provide through these guests, it is an education to tune in daily at 1 o'clock. Tomorrow is no exception. We will welcome Kevin Miller into the studio along with Taylor Braunas. I think they're both coming tomorrow to talk about Man Up, that men's ministry that started at Calvary Church months ago. And the next Man Up rally happening tomorrow night at 5:30 at Calvary Church on Osuna. And we hope you guys will come out for it. But we'll bring you all the details tomorrow on ABQ Connect. And I say 5:30, get out early enough that you're able to get some of the food and fellowship and things before the worship gets underway. And, of course, a message for the guys. It's been a great time, actually, and we've seen ministry grow from that. Although there's some ministry that happens at Man Up, really what the hope is, and you'll hear more about it tomorrow, is that we'll see Man Up raise up, help ministry rise up all over the city with some of the different things that the men are able to accomplish together. Along with that, tomorrow we'll get an update from the Heritage Foundation. Look to hear from Genevieve Wood, and then from John Moore Associates, our Friday financial update with Brian Cochran. That is all part of tomorrow's ABQ Connect in the 1 o'clock hour. You'll find archived shows on the web at abqconnect.online. So if you heard a show you want to share with someone, that's a great way to do it. Just go to the website abqconnect.online and look for the archives shows there. I want to thank Jared, our engineer, not only for flipping the switches and keeping us on the air, but keeping you informed on the website by posting those shows. So abqconnect.online. We are in studio with Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, and going through various blogs that he's provided for us on the website. Now, the one website for Rio Grande Foundation is riograndefoundation.org. But much of what we're going through today, if not all, is found at errorsofenchantment.com. And Paul, have you got your EV yet?
No. Just had to get a new alternator put in the minivan. I mentioned our Texas trip, so we flew to Dallas and then rented a minivan. The wife didn't want to drive all the way down. That's an even longer drive than what we did.
Yeah.
So we flew to Dallas, and during that time frame, we were getting our lovely existing minivan fixed in the shop with a new alternator. But no, I've never actually driven an electric vehicle myself.
Not even a golf cart?
Yeah, a golf cart. I mean, a real vehicle.
I had to go there, Paul.
I definitely have driven electric golf carts, and they are just amazing. Yeah. I think we should just mandate those.
Well, California, you know, if you have not heard, I mean, I don't know how many months ago it was, Paul, we talked about the story where Governor Gavin Newsom mandated in California that all vehicles go EV by what, 2035?
They are... Yeah. Eliminating internal combustion engines in California by 2035.
Yeah.
Sure they are. We have a regulation on the books here in New Mexico that took effect just over 1 year ago. Now, it took time to run it through this unelected board that's appointed by Michelle Lujan Grisham, the governor, called the Environmental Improvement Board. And that board's been around for years. Normally not a big deal, but with the environmental policies of this governor, it's becoming a bigger deal. But right now, as of this time next year, we will be under a regulation that the governor pushed through this EIB to mandate that 7% of vehicles sold in New Mexico are electric. that's already going to between double and triple the amount of electric vehicles required in this state. And given all the issues with deploying charging stations and, also paying for road construction through the gas tax, you got a lot of issues with that mandate itself. But the governor recently came out and said, I want to follow California almost to the letter, but not quite. She wants by 2027 to impose a 43% mandate. So 43% of vehicles sold in 2027's model year in the state of New Mexico, assuming that she gets this through this unelected board, will be EVs. That requirement will rise up to 82% by 2032. She does not go to the California full route of eliminating internal combustion engines by 2035, but you can see the writing on the wall. Although, to be fair, this governor will not be in charge of implementing this full regulation. She will be punting this off to a Martin Heinrich or some other governor who takes over next.
Is that just a prediction?
Yeah. I have on good authority that Heinrich wants to run for governor next time around.
I'm just letting you know I'm listening.
So, yeah. So we'll see. But the governor, I think, remember we talked last time or two times ago about the post-session vetoes and her upsetting her environmental base. Well, this is her opportunity to kind of try to make it up to them a little bit by imposing nearly California-style regulations on electric vehicles.
Now, to bring some reality to this, because we're talking about the future. You're talking about years from now, but listen, 2027, that is 3.5 years away.
Yeah, and we're talking model years. So realistically,
yeah,
right. We're talking
two and a half years away.
Yeah, so it's because the model years always come out, the
about
summer
yeah.
Before the actual year you're talking about. So this is not far-fetched down the – it is far-fetched in actually achieving it, absent very, very significant subsidies and additional mandates and additional technology and manufacturing capacity, not to mention charging stations and other things. This will be a very, very expensive process.
Yeah. Well, and I'll say this because you and I, and maybe you're one of these. I'm not, Paul. I'm more an impulse buyer. But for our friends who research everything 2 years before they make a purchase, if it gets to where it could be going, like you said, implementing it is one thing. You may start doing some of your shopping and research now. And I have to think, Paul, even in 2 years, there's going to be more and more companies jumping into the race that, God willing, will lower some of the cost of some of these vehicles. I mean, I just can't, I look at what the cost of these vehicles are, and it's one thing to look at used, of course, as opposed to new, but even that is considerable. And have to wonder how many of our residents we're going to see getting in real good shape riding their bicycle or e-bike.
Well, my suspicion is that people will go to another state. That's already kind of common. Colorado, Texas, other states that don't have these rules on the books. And that it's... done more now with the internet and other options. Now, of course...
So this is all purchase. It's not use.
At this point, correct. Of course, you're going to get to a point where someone, a politician, and I could easily see a guy like Heinrich wanting to do this, where, people aren't buying enough vehicles here in the States, electric vehicles. We're going to start regulating gas stations or start regulating your driver's license or your automobile license to make those be more oriented towards electric vehicles. So you're pushing on a balloon in a sense, but I can easily see a Governor Heinrich who's even more radical than Michelle Lujan Grisham is. And I'm not saying that he will be the next governor. There's obviously a lot of time between now and a 2026 election campaign in this state, but I'm just using him because he is a Democrat. Democrats have a strong track record in New Mexico of getting their people elected, and he is a very prominent individual who I think will take a pretty harsh stand on this to really push those electric vehicles. So we'll just see how it all shakes out. But we are going to at the Rio Grande Foundation undertake a significant public education campaign and hopefully a grassroots action campaign to really try to pressure this unelected board to at least consider alternatives.
All right. Well, if you just tuned in, we're in the midst of a conversation going over different public policies and news with the Rio Grande Foundation president, Paul Gessing, and looking at a lot of the blogs that he's prepared for all of us to check out at no cost at errorsofenchantment.com. However, both, of course, nonprofit Rio Grande Foundation, and when you go to the website at riograndefoundation.org, if you are led to do so, you'll find a place to donate to support the work there. Coming up after the break, we'll continue our conversation with Paul on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
All right, yeah, beginning of the show, we talked about the heat, and off the air, Paul and I were just talking about actually looking at the hourly. Looks like we could have some rain this afternoon, so all of you like me with swamp coolers, well, find a place to go sit inside somewhere, maybe other than home.
Well, yesterday it got really gusty around dusk, kind of unpleasant to be outside. It rained a little bit, sprinkled, didn't really...
Enough to make my windshield very difficult to look through.
Yeah, we have that very unique phenomenon around here with the dust that kicks up and just enough liquid in the air to make it stick to your car. And I don't know. I see a lot of car washes around town, and I guess people think that if they keep washing their cars, they'll stay clean for more than a day or two.
Well, we talked about the days in a row at triple digits. Going to be close today. The forecast at 5 p.m. is 99 degrees. And I'll say what I said at the beginning of the show. Drink lots of water and keep in mind those that you might know that are alone, maybe widows or widowers, retired in their home that may not have great cooling. Really be considerate of those in your sphere of influence. There is a National Weather Service Middle Rio Grande Valley severe weather notice out today. So just be aware. I think it's important as we head through this. Let's head through it together and get through it together. In studio with Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, and we're covering various blogs that Paul has posted at errorsofenchantment.com. And Paul, our next looking at a decision by the U.S. Supreme Court that was back as far as 2018.
Yeah, well, in the summertime, it's kind of a ritual in late June, early July, the Supreme Court hands down their decisions, and some of those decisions, of course, were very impactful this year. But 5 years ago in the Janus, J-A-N-U-S versus AFSCME decision, the court ruled that public employees, so people who work for government at the state and local level, could not be coerced into join a union as a precondition of their employment within that job.
What defines coercion?
You have to pay union dues or you cannot take that job.
Yeah.
And that's pretty coercive. It's kind of like the vaccine debate we had over COVID. But in this case, it was just the idea that you had to fund a union, an organization, private organization, in order to work for a job that was ultimately funded by the taxpayers of whatever state or city. New Mexico's not a right-to-work state, so we were one of the states impacted by this decision. We still have private sector employees, so people working for local companies outside of government, may still have to join a union if they want to work for that particular company. But the government right to work has existed now for 5 years here in New Mexico. And our friends at the Mackinac Center, a state think tank up in Michigan, we worked on some education-related efforts with them in the wake of the decision to make sure that union members and public employees knew their rights. We had a fair amount of success, actually. According to this new study by the Mackinac Center, New Mexico saw the greatest decline in public sector union membership in the wake of the Janus decision of any state in the country. 61.9% of union members in public employment saw fit to quit their union. The next highest state was Colorado at 50.6. So we were about 10 points higher than Colorado. No other state saw greater departure above 35%. So New Mexicans, I guess, what I'm hearing here or seeing here is that the people working for in these government positions weren't super excited about being part of the union and paying the dues for the work that they did. And so they wound up leaving when they had the opportunity to do so. So we consider worker freedom to be a good thing. People shouldn't be forced to pay for speech in this case that they don't agree with. And you can go and check out the chart and information showing this at heirsofenchantment.com.
Yeah, I actually read one or two of the comments. By the way, when you go to heirsofenchantment.com, not only will you find the blog by Paul, but Paul, really some great comments by some of the readers on there.
Yeah, we have a good group of readers who watch the watch our site and watch what we're putting out. And, I appreciate that because we are a nonpartisan voice. We are avowedly pro-freedom, pro-education reform, and really trying to push for these things that are definitely a challenge for the political environment of New Mexico. But we remain hopeful that we will choose a path that is better than the path that we are currently on.
All right, we got about maybe 3 minutes, Paul, but maybe one of the most important blogs of the stack that we're going through today. And with the time we have left and your familiarity with it, I'm just going to throw it to you. The blogs relating to the kids.
Yeah. Well, we did a lot of work on the kids count report this particular year. New Mexico came in 50th in that report, and that's never fun. It's not good.
Surprising.
Unfortunately, not surprising. And, we talk about Texas. We talk about other states that do things differently. And New Mexico has followed the path pretty consistently of spending more money and just trying to spend our way and government program our way out of 50th place. And based on long history here in New Mexico and across the nation and the world, bigger government does not tend to lead to better outcomes. Instead, things like reforming our education system and making the system accountable for what it does and getting those better results. So those are more impactful, and we want to emphasize those reforms and educate New Mexicans about them. We're having a day-long education conference here in Albuquerque at St. Pius the 10th High School on Coors Boulevard, about a mile north of I-40. This is September 22nd, 2023. And folks who are interested in this free event can go to oaknm.org. That stands for Opportunities for All Kids New Mexico. We're going to have some really great speakers talking about Mississippi and what they're doing to improve their educational system, Arizona, what they're doing in education, and other states and other parts of the education structure that can really, I think, do a lot better than we have in New Mexico.
All right. Well, Paul, I appreciate the time you took to walk through each of these stories today and keep us informed on public policy issues and how we can find out more. Of course, we didn't even cover everything really that's available to look over at errorsofenchantment.com. But you can go do that. And Paul, you've got an invite, as always. Come on back next month and we'll do this again.
Absolutely. And yeah, there's a lot of information that builds up over a month, and we only cover a part of it during these shows.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in. Join us tomorrow for that Man Up update. We'll get the Heritage Foundation and our Friday Financial Update with Brian Cochran tomorrow on ABQ Connect.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.